Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call to order our special Board of Education meeting in open session this evening here in the Doyle Administration Building. Our first item on the agenda is public appearances. There are no public appearances, I believe, at this time. All right. Our second item on the agenda is announcements, and I do have two announcements. I just would like to invite our community to come and support Madison's Juneteenth Day, celebrated on Saturday, June 17th at Penn Park from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. The second item is we'd like to congratulate our Madison Spelling Bee champion, Isabel Japeson, for her participation in the National Spelling Bee competition in Washington, D.C., and Isabel placed a very impressive 14th in the national competition, so congratulations to Isabel. Item number three on our agenda, Ms. Kubza.
I move that the board approve the attached resolution relative to the attachment of the Ripple annexation to the MMSD and the detachment of such annexation from the Verona Area School District pursuant to WISSTAT section 117.132.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion. Ms. Saavedra?
I just have a quick question because I'm not very good at maps. Where would this be? Is this out on the far west side, or is this closer to the Fitchburg-Chavez area? Just more of a curiosity.
My recollection is it's on the far west side, Roger.
Site is on the far west side, just off of Raymond Road. And if you see it on the map that's about four or five pages back, you see Raymond Road sketched very lightly in the bottom, and then there's another, believe it or not, it's the Mica. Is it another side street? That's in an existing subdivision. So it is further west than the Chavez and further out.
And a little north.
So it's out
there. Is there any other questions?
Thank you.
All right. Any other discussion? Further discussion? Okay, we'll move to a vote. Connor, your vote?
Aye.
The rest of the board, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion passes 7-0. The next item on our agenda is a representative of the Schools of Hope leadership team will present information regarding the success of the MMSD reading program. I will turn the meeting over to the superintendent. I do see that there's other people here relate to the Schools of Hope project, and hopefully we'll get a chance to meet some of those folks as well. Superintendent.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Julie Underwood, who is the dean of the School of Education at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Not even the new dean anymore.
No.
Slightly used.
Slightly used.
Young but experienced dean of the University of Wisconsin. Also present tonight is Kathy Hubbard, who is United Way staffer, and Erica Brongen, who also is, who have worked. Kathy's been involved in the Schools of Hope project since day one as kind of the staff person from United Way dealing with it. She also supports me. I'm the chair of one of their committees, and she's my support staff, and she's really good, by the way. I want to thank her for that. But Dr. Underwood is here tonight to really bring you up to date on where Schools of Hope is and kind of the things that she reported to the leadership team a little bit earlier this year. So, Julie?
Thank you. I want to thank you all for taking the time and allowing me to be here. As was said, I'm representing the Schools of Hope leadership team. I've only been here as dean of the School of Education since August of this year. Previously, I was here as a faculty member at the University of Wisconsin from 1986 to 1995. And in between there, I've been in D.C. primarily as general counsel for the National School Boards Association. So I give you that context and some of those dates because it's important in coming back to Madison and taking a look at what's happening and certainly what's happening in this district. My technology, of course, is a little messed up at this moment, but that's all right because the backup is you have a handout, And I will draw your attention, I believe you have a handout that looks like this. I will draw your attention to the first page of that. And the screen is really supposed to be that very first graph that you have on your document. So tonight I'm here to actually do three things: to commend the work that you have done, since I haven't been a part of it, it's happening since I've been gone, to thank you for doing it, and to actually encourage you to stay the course with the Schools of Hope project. If you see, when I got here as Dean of the School of Education, one of the things that I saw about the Madison District was the phenomenal work that you had done in terms of closing the achievement gap or eliminating the achievement gap, at least in the area of reading. Let me go back one. This is really going to mess up, isn't it? Now, I usually like to see lines going up, indicating something that's going on. But in this situation, as you know, you want these lines to go down because this represents the number of students or the percentage of students who were below the minimum performance in the reading test. And as you see, from 1995 on your handout to 2005, you see a steady progression of that achievement gap closing, narrowing and narrowing. And if you take the starting point of 1995, where the black line is there, that's the starting date of the Schools of Hope project, which kind of is the benchmark that I would suggest to you, and the Schools of Hope leadership team would suggest to you, started this in the progression that it's been. It's really, at the time, a powerful collaboration of the community that made this possible. What was the work that was done in the community, as an outsider, I can say, is nothing short of spectacular. There are lots of things that could be done, lots of strategies that could be employed to close an achievement gap. School districts around the United States are trying to do this. And what was chosen here are three specific strategies, all of them based on research, not just things that you all thought sounded good or somebody else had success with, but three strategies which were used in combination and had a powerful effect on the achievement of the children in the Madison School District. And you can clearly see that it had a powerful effect by the graph that shows the closing of the achievement gap. Now, the three of them are the one-on-one tutoring, the class size reduction, and the teacher professional development. As we did this in the leadership team, what I'd like to do is give you just a few minutes, on why you would expect each of these strategies to work based on the research, the effects that they've had, and then, of course, the conditions for making it really be effective. So in terms of the one-on-one tutoring, the research shows that one-on-one tutoring is very important in raising the achievement level of students, particularly minority students. One of the reasons that you expect it to work is that it is such a targeted, focused response to a student's learning problems, so that you can actually target on an individual student and help them in the areas that they need specific help. It also certainly helps students stay on task and therefore stay engaged, which we know is pretty important. In terms of the positive effects, we've seen students student achievement really march up once tutoring is employed. And one of the other reasons that you really, it's a good strategy, is that you can remove the tutoring. Once a student has gotten on a good path, you can remove the tutoring. It's not something that you have to, a treatment that you have to continue on and on and on. It can kind of come and go. This one is very important in terms of thinking about the conditions that make one-on-one tutoring effective. One of the most important things is that you actually have to have trained tutors. And many people will say that you need trained professional teachers as tutors or highly trained individuals of some training that also has to be tied to the curriculum. It can't be tutoring that is not embedded within the curricular goals that the students are working on. If you do it that way, it really has no effect. If you don't have trained tutors, the research shows there's very minimal effect for improving. But when you have trained teachers, they're tutoring students one-on-one, and it's tied to the curriculum, you see significant gains in student achievement. The next strategy, and I know that it's difficult to read this little chart, but, you know, it's data-driven. Sorry, bear with me. I like my little chart there. This is class size reduction. One of the things that's important, sometimes you see school districts around the United States talking about low student-teacher ratios. That's not what this is about. This is about class size reduction, so that you're actually talking about a fewer students in a class, not just having more adults in a building and therefore dividing it in a different way, but a smaller class. And it's very important that it is smaller class size, not student-teacher ratio that we're talking about. One of the reasons that the research shows that this is effective is that it encourages student engagement. Students tend to focus more. It fosters stronger social relationships. And really, this is one of the reasons we expect it to work. And the condition for it working are interlocked here. You have to have some change in teaching. Teachers like a smaller class size because they, in fact, can teach differently so that they can engage in smaller groups, or they can have more one-on-one time with students, or students can engage in more collaborative work. So the nature of the teaching actually changes. And although not all of the research bears this out, I would suggest to you that it is the change in teaching that really makes the profound effect in terms of student achievement here. And you can't do that with a large class. You've got to have a small class size. The reason I have this little chart here, the most well-known study on smaller class sizes is STAR study, the Tennessee STAR study. And the encircled there, you can see the profound difference between white students and minority students. So you have a higher impact, a larger impact for students of color when you reduce class size. So not only does this improve student achievement generally, but it has a more profound effect on students of color, which is exactly what you wanted to target. Another interesting thing about class size reduction is that not only do you get these effects that you see in the circle the first year, but those effects continue. Once you get students moving in the right direction, that trajectory continues for students. And I think that's exactly what you want to have happen. The third that was chosen based on the research is teacher professional development. Now, teacher professional development, many people would argue, many of the researchers would argue, and they have data to prove that out, is the most profound strategy that you can use to improve student achievement, that it's actually the driver of all change for student learning. If you have teachers who are continually engaged in their own professional development, learning new strategies, trying to improve their own practice, that translates to student learning directly and very profoundly. So, of course, one of the things, let me quickly go over to the conditions for effective professional development. It's very important that professional development be tied to the curriculum. And so that it's coherent and sustained, that it's actually done in a very thoughtful way. Once that has been once that's focused, teacher professional development is focused, it really does improve student learning pretty drastically. So if you take all three of those in combination, you have some strong results. And what you saw happening here in the Madison District was in 1995 when the Schools of Hope leadership team started, and there was lots of public engagement in this project, and the community decided to take this task on. And then in 1997, when the district started their Your Balanced Literacy approach, the next benchmark, 1998, is when the VISTA volunteers came into the elementary schools. And in 1999, the individualized reading assessments, K-3, and lower class size. And as you go on, you see the profound effect that you've had over these 10 years by really focusing on three powerful strategies that have been shown by the research to improve student learning. I have to tell you from the national perspective that this really is something that other school districts have tried to do all across the United States. And I can come in as a quasi-outsider and toot your horn for you and say that I believe that you're the only school district that really has been able to do this. If you look at it in the way that I like to think about lines going up, you see that number of students or the percentage of students who are actually scoring at that very high proficient and advanced level in their reading as well. This has been done where all students have gone up, not just closing the gap, but actually closing the gap by moving the target higher and higher and higher, which is, of course, exactly what you want to have happen. So my commending you and thanking you for employing these strategies, I draw you to the last page of this handout where we have the list of the Schools of Hope leadership team, but also the conclusions that the Schools of Hope leadership team has drawn in looking back and reflecting over these last 10 years. That really the work is unprecedented, and it is remarkable. These three strategies in combination have had an incredible effect. And as I told you to begin with, that I was going to, in my third point, ask you to stay the course. If you continue in this path, I'm sure that you will see these gaps continue to shrink. You'll see student learning improving. But if you choose not to, and you roll that back, I'm afraid that student achievement will start dropping, and you will see a gap increasing, and you'll be where most districts are these days. That's my story.
Thank you very much for your presentation, Dr. Underwood. Is there any questions for Dr. Underwood? Ms. Robarts?
Thank you for your presentation, and I don't want my question to imply that I don't support what the Schools of Hope have done. I think it's very, very important. But, and I think we're making significant progress. But on chart one here.
Do you mean the very first page?
Yeah.
The one that I can't really see on the, yes?
Yeah. It seems to me, I just want to understand your chart. I think the top achievement level in reading is advanced, followed by proficient, followed by minimal, then basic?
Basic and then minimal.
Basic and then minimal. So minimal is the very bottom one.
That's correct.
Okay. I think we're making lots of progress, but when I voted in 1998 to make all groups becoming increasingly proficient and advanced on third grade reading, it's the chart on page four that I thought we were trying to achieve, a situation in which regardless of race or ethnicity or income or any of the other categories, more of our students, you know, the percentage, there would not be the kinds of gaps that we had in 98 in students scoring at the higher levels, at proficient and advanced.
Is this the one that you're talking about right here?
Yeah.
Okay.
And certainly we're making progress, particularly Southeast Asian students are making progress. But when I hear we've closed the gap, I find that hard to reconcile with the remaining gap for African American students at At this higher level. I never personally believed that it's the bottom gap was the one we were worried about. I always believed and still do that this is the one that matters the most, because whether you're minimal or basic, if I understand it, you're below grade level.
This is proficient and advanced.
Yeah, these are the ones who are at least grade level.
Above.
Yeah,
our goal is all groups
at grade level or better.
I would think your goal would be to have every child at that advanced level.
It is. Yeah. That's my personal goal.
But when you have a gap, as you see in previous years before the 1995, that's pretty tragic. So this is very powerful stuff.
On the other end, I mean, I agree with you, but on page 4 here, it looks like there is still, you know, when you focus on the very bottom there, chart one, the minimal and the basics, whichever order they belong in, I think it distracts from something that needs to continue to be a major goal for us, which is to bring that African-American number much closer to the others. I mean, the gap seems to have, at that level, gone from about 40% to about 30%, but it's still a gap. Am I not reading the chart right?
If I could, I might give a little bit of history of this.
My question was really about this chart. Am I not reading it right?
No, I think you are, but I think it would put it in better perspective to understand what the two charts are. The original goal of Schools of Hope and our original goal as a board was this chart right here. Because if you'll recall, we used a scattergram that looked at the chance of success for a child who scored minimal. And the chance of success was zero, basically. There were four kids out of, like, there were 1,400 kids that had taken the test, if you'll recall. There was a scattergram. And the original goal of Schools of Hope and the continuing goal of Schools of Hope, and our goal initially was to eliminate this gap, because children who score minimal are never going to be successful in school. That was the original goal. Along the way, we as a district switch to the proficient and advanced, but continued every year to report to you and talk about this minimal level, because that's the children who are going to be unsuccessful in school almost no matter what we do. Schools of Hope continued that. And so for us, the elimination, the gap for children who are minimal, who are not going to be successful because of reading only, has been eliminated. But we continue to work toward the other goal, and that's the goal that we now stress with the board. But in its initial phase, and for Schools of Hope throughout, minimal was the place we were trying to go. We've now switched, of course, as you know, we now have a completely new test, and all bets are off. But
that's part of my question. The committee, the community committee that worked on this goal, was not expressing itself in terms of these kind of categories. They were saying, you know, the original goal, as I remember, was all third graders will read at third grade level or above the end of third grade.
It actually was to eliminate what at the time was called below standard. It's now called minimal. But the original goal, as it was set out by Schools of Hope, was to eliminate those children who read at below standard.
I'm not arguing with what the Schools of Hope may have set as a goal. But when the board voted to adopt these three goals to quantify,
would read at grade level was correct.
We were talking about grade level or above.
But the board's initial belief about that, which changed later on, was that that would be when we eliminated, because at the time it was done, the test was scored differently. It was actually scored above standard, inconclusive, and below standard.
Are we now saying that kids who are above minimal are at grade level? Is that what we're now
saying?
We
do not say that now.
Okay.
That's what I said. We did originally
When we count it as it's counted in chart one.
We do not say that.
The board did not go back and redefine its goal.
You have a question related to that?
Yeah, I had a question for her.
Yeah, I understand. let's make sure we answer the questions. Ms. Robarts has a question for Dean Underwood. Ms. Robarts, go ahead and ask your question, and Dean Underwood will answer.
If you know, because this is during the time when you were at
in D.C.,
yeah. Where you were incredibly wonderful the couple of times I saw you present to school board attorneys. By the way, I was happy to see them back to join us. Now, when we look at proficient and advanced, just for, you know, the people not on the Schools of Hope and not on the board and all this so forth, what fit, if any, is there between those categories and reading at the third grade, what we call grade level?
Well, actually, that question is now pretty academic since they've changed the test as well. But this is not reading at grade level. And this, of course, is the proficient and advanced at third grade reading. And I imagine that the proficient is grade level. Is that correct?
Thank you.
And to your other point, do you know, the reason that I put this second chart, that I like this second chart, is that it is much more aspirational in terms of, look at, this is really phenomenal what you have done, and I commend you and thank you for doing it, but there's a lot of work that still needs to be done.
Ms. Pathak.
I have a couple of questions. The first one actually relates to this, and the question is, what are the next steps? You asked us to stay the course. Where is Schools of Hope going? Is it going to be adopting new directions, or, you know, is it going to be saying, you know, okay, we've done this chunk, now let's...
Do you want to stand up and do that one, Kent?
I think you got it on number three, but yes, please come up front. No, you got to come up front. We got to let the people see you. You know, it drives the people in the back crazy when they, you know, they got to get the camera angle just right.
Thank you.
Now I remember I was at this meeting. This wasn't just an hour and a half conversation. This part of it right here. Okay. Yeah. All right.
That's why I was not going to do this one by myself.
Okay, I understand.
All right, so in terms of the next steps for Schools of Hope, certainly at this point in time, we're trying to assess what the impact's going to be of the change in the tests. And so we'll be looking at how we can continue to monitor third grade. And then additionally, have our focus on completion of algebra by the 10th grade. So that's something we have been working on, but we'll put an increased focus on that. Because of what we're seeing in this chart, we're also looking at strategies for our tutors in terms of working with, in particular, African American and Latino children. So those are, I think, the key directions that we're really focusing on.
And, you know, nationally, that math goal is very important for the other half of this, you know, if you tackle reading and math. And twin goals.
Ms. Mathag, do you have another question?
Yeah, and it relates to, you talked quite a bit about professional development for teachers. Could you say a little bit more about what you mean by that? Because from where I sit, it could be more pedagogical training, or it could be more content training. I'm not sure, sort of, you know, if you could flesh that out, that would be so helpful.
I'd be glad to. I'm not sure whether... I could go on and on, too. That's the risk we take.
Okay, now, you got to keep it short, Dean Underwood. I understand.
I know,
again,
you saw my eyes light up.
This is where the conversation really went off into an hour and a half conversation at the United Way meeting.
Nationally, we know that the professional development that most teachers want is not content area, but is pedagogy. As actually tied to the content area would be those tied to our curriculum standards. But as you think about learning, the research that continues to go on about how children learn, it's pretty important that teachers continue to learn the new research on student learning, on brain development, on those very important kind of tasks that you can do that have a powerful impact on students. and content is really is secondary. But it's the biggest caveat is that it's got to be tied to your curriculum.
Is there any other questions for Dr. Underwood? Carol, would you like to make a statement? I know you do.
This is basically a question for Julie. At various times, people say to us, well, why don't you take advantage of the university? It's right over there. You're not working with them. And, of course, if you say that to the former holder of your office, Dean Reed, he almost explodes. But would you like to talk a little bit about the relationship between the university, and particularly the School of Education, and the district?
Thank you. I see that there can be wonderful collaboration between the university, not just the School of Education, because, in my opinion, teacher education and education for the purpose of improving public schools isn't just within the School of Education, but is much more broad than that. We have collaborations that I've seen so far with the district that are pretty impressive, and I'm quite proud of. If you look at our professional development schools, you were talking about some of our professional development schools earlier this evening. The work that's going on there is significant. We also have some projects in math and science that are collaborations between the university faculty members and academic staffs, Wisconsin Center for Educational Research, and the Madison District. We may not be in your classes every day. We may not have thousands of student teachers and practicum students and faculty teaching your classes or taking the place of your faculty, but the collaborations that we do have, I think, are pretty appropriate and are real positive, from my opinion.
Superintendent, could you talk a little bit more about the partnerships between the MMSD and the university?
Sure. I've had the opportunity, certainly over since 1999, working with the Minority Student Achievement Network, to see the relationship between other similar school districts who are located adjacent to major research universities, and there's no comparison between their relationship with the university they're associated with and the one that we have had for many, many years with the University of Wisconsin. The University of Wisconsin-Madison is an integral part of our school district. We cooperate across the board on research. Our staffs go back and forth. I feel very comfortable, and I think most of our staff feel very comfortable talking directly with researchers. In many cases, that research is being done in our schools. It is a truly, I think, at least from the K-12 standpoint, it is a truly unique partnership that has certainly benefited us enormously. It enables, I think, our district to really and truly stay on the cutting edge of the research that's going on and benefit from it in ways that it's different if you have that researcher actually in your classroom or in your school or in your district and you are collaborating directly around what's happening in that research. That's a very different kind of implementation than reading the research paper later.
We call that the embedded researcher model.
And it is a truly unique partnership, and certainly a lot of the success that we've had is because of that relationship and what we're able to glean from it. And I think we give back. I think we're a valuable part of that also.
Ms. Carson.
One other softball question. It actually takes you back to where you started, basically, in your speech, which is people look at this chart and say, well, we're not moving fast enough. We're not far enough along. We still have the gap is still there. We've been doing this for 8-10 years, and we haven't eliminated it. And the question is, do we continue to do what we've done up to now, or is there something else that we should be doing?
If you look at your previous year's information, there was a lot of work. There was a lot of work that was going on in this school district because this school district had a commitment to all children. And at least publicly, people had, I believe, committed to the philosophy that all children could learn and learn at high levels. And there were things going on, but it is my opinion, as I've read through the information with the Schools of Hope and talked to the people who were involved in planning and implementing this, it wasn't until you hit on three very important research-based strategies that work well in combination that made some significant differences, where you started to see some significant gains for student learning and approaching the closing of that achievement gap. I don't think you're never done with this work because you have children who keep coming into your district. I mean, that's just the nature of public schools. And you're never done with this work because a school district that's truly committed to teaching children to high levels is never going to be, it's never going to be good enough. I mean, you always set the bar a little higher than you are if you're truly a committed district. So it may be frustrating to do it in that way, but I would urge you to keep doing what you've been doing because the research bears you out. I mean, that's one of the reasons that our collaboration is so important. At least, you know, we've can figure out ways that don't work just in theory, but actually work in children and in classrooms.
Ms. Mathak, then Mr. Vang.
I have a question about the page 2 of this handout. It's actually at the end of your handout, I think.
The report, yes.
Critical components. And it says on this page, towards the bottom under, although great strides have been made, and so forth and so on, it says the number and percent of minority and low-income students in the Madison Metropolitan School District is increasing. These are the students who enter kindergarten lacking in needed skills compared to their counterparts. Do you really mean to imply that all of the minority students who are now coming in are coming in ill-prepared?
You know, we know nationwide that it is much more likely that children of color have fewer educational opportunities than minority children when they walk in the door in kindergarten or if you start children in first grade or even start in early kindergarten. We know those opportunities are statistically less available for children of color. That doesn't mean that I'm saying that every single home is that way, but it is more likely.
Can I suggest to you that for many parents of color, especially the professionals who share the university campus with you, that's sort of an offensive position to take? As a parent of an African-American son, I deeply resent the notion that being a minority inherently means that you come in more poorly prepared. We have a growing body of professional and highly educated people of color in this community, and I think I would propose to you and the Schools of Hope that one of our biggest challenges is that we have not yet figured out that they are not all poor, that these children are not all coming from disadvantaged backgrounds, and in fact, some of them, many of them, are not only very well prepared, but are also very likely to succeed if we stop pigeonholing them into the ill-prepared and under-potential categories that so often take place. And I apologize for being rude in that comment.
Mr. Vang.
Well, thank you for the presentation. I must say that I'm very impressed with the progress that particularly Southeast Asian students have made. And I'm not sure if it's the balanced literacy that has made all the differences, because there was certainly a big drop there.
That's a precipitous drop, isn't it?
I also want to say that besides the core group of people who are listed here, there are hundreds of other volunteers who are not teachers, but who are community members, parents, and business organizations and other organizations out there who are a part of the School for Hope, and I want to thank them, because I don't think that one of them gets paid for to do that. So I want to thank everybody. I know that as a district, we still have a ways to go before we close the gap. And this is only a part of the overall achievement gap for ethnic minorities and poor students in the district. But I do want to thank the School of Hope for being a partner with the district to work on this this particular the reading gap, knowing that, and maybe the superintendent can help me, knowing that each year the number of poor and ethnic minority students have grown to the point where it's about 44% of the 24,000 students that comprise the Madison School District. And I, you know, since 1995, how has that population grown from?
The population in poverty, I believe, has probably doubled, or just about doubled since then. I want to say in 95 we were probably around 24-25% low income. Now we're at about 44. One of the kind of incredible things about this, if you understand the effect that poverty statistically has on achievement, is if you look at this chart or the other chart, either one, if you look at the other chart of proficient advanced, statistically what should have happened is that should have gone down, mm-hmm. not up. So it's not just the fact that it's gone up consistently and extremely well, and it's gone up for everybody. I mean, the gap would be very small if all of our white kids had stayed where we were in 1998. So one of the incredible things about this, and one of the things that I think the board and the community should be proud of with the work, is that we have continued to get better and better and better, even though statistically, if you look at the effect that particularly poverty has on low income, then it goes down. Another thing that doesn't show up here that I just might mention, we also break down this data based on income within race. And right now, based on this test, who knows with a new one, but based on this test, there was no achievement gap at all for our middle income and upper kids, regardless of race. They all score exactly the same. And that's different than it was when we started. There was a gap within our middle-income children, just like there was in our lower-income children. So, anyway, but that's about where I think we've come.
I just have one more question then.
All right, Mr. Van.
And I was looking at the School of Hope's leadership team, and I know that, let's see, we have African-American, Hispanic, Southeast Asian, other Asians, and white students up there. And I, you know, the team, I read the list of names, and it's a very impressive group of community leaders. But I couldn't find an Asian representative in there. I wonder if that's something that could be brought back to the team to see if they would consider having an Asian representative on the team.
I appreciate your notice of that. We have, over the years, had representation, but unfortunately, it sort of stopped for a while, so we need to get back to that. So maybe we'll give you a call.
All right, but overall, thank you for the presentation.
Again, thank you very much for the presentation.
If I can make one final comment that I think is important. Dr. Underwood talked about the three things that we've done, and they are the right, I mean, I'm convinced they're the right three things, and we need to keep our focus on them. But, for example, balanced literacy looks very different today than it looked when you see it started to be implemented up here. The way we do things, even though it's those three things, we continue to refine how we do that all the time so that balanced literacy is a much more sophisticated approach. It's much It's built on some little bit different research. It's much better than it was the day we started. So even though it's the same three things, those same three things get better all the time because we learn more and refine them and refine them and refine them.
Okay, thank you very much. Again, thank you for the presentation, your time, effort, and energy, not only to this school district, but to this entire community. And the United Way has definitely been a major contributor to the success of this school district and what we're going to be doing in the future. So, again, Ms. Hubbard, Dr. Underwood, thank you very much for everything. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.